Good afternoon. Today is Monday, July 18th, 2011. I'm Martin Lemlin, and this is News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Hello, it's 5:01 on Monday, July 18th. I'm Martin Lemlin. This is News 101. We've got a very special show for you today. We're going to have the latest news on Romana Manzoor, a UBC student who was partially or completely blinded in a brutal attack in Bangladesh. We're going to have our inaugural newscast from a newbie here in the news department named Nina. Scott Douglas is going to give us our weekday weather forecast. And Jesse Storm is going to phone in and give us a little bit of insight. But before we get to all that, we're going to start with a bit from Free Speech Radio News.
Last week's protest that resulted in polarizing.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, the 18th of July, 2011. In San Francisco, I'm Danny Wood. Coming up on the newscast. Tensions remain high between the US and Pakistan as victims of US drone attacks pursue criminal charges against government officials. President Obama announces the nomination of former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And in California, grocery store workers continue to fight for better working conditions after months of stalled negotiations.
It's something that I think that we should do if we don't get what we want.
Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Neil Abram with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. The United Nations delivered another 20,000 tents today to the overflowing Dadaab refugee camp near the Kenya-Somali border. Dadaab was built to house 90,000 people. Nearly 450,000 displaced by drought and famine are there now. Kenya plans to open another wing of the camp next week to accommodate even more refugees. UNICEF Emergency Advisor Robert McCarthy.
Well, our effort, first and foremost, is to support efforts to keep children from dying. And there's a major concern given the almost unprecedented levels of malnutrition that we're seeing among children coming out of southern Somalia.
And the UN says another 1.5 million people have been displaced within Somalia. Yesterday, UNICEF was able to deliver emergency rations to parts of the drought-ravaged country after Al-Shabaab lifted a ban on foreign aid groups working in the region. Aid is now being delivered to camps run by the group despite its connection to Al-Qaeda. The United Nations International Court of Justice today called on Thailand and Cambodia to establish a demilitarized zone near a disputed 900-year-old Hindu temple where clashes earlier this year left almost 20 people dead. Ron Corbin has more.
The court's verdict followed a request by Cambodia for a review of a 1962 court ruling that gave Cambodia control of the temple site but did not address the surrounding area on the Thai side of the border. Thai Prime Minister Apisit Wechachawa.
The decision is aimed to reduce the tension and obviously with a demilitarized solution. It's something that I think Thailand and Cambodia should work together to see how we can achieve that.
The court also called on Thailand to allow Cambodian access to the Temple of Praviran, allow fresh supplies of non-military personnel, and for both countries to cooperate with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, including monitors along the border. Both sides appeared to accept the verdict. Fighting between Thailand and Cambodia had been ongoing over recent years after Cambodia in 2008 successfully had the temple declared a World Heritage Site. Ron Corbin, FSRN, Bangkok.
Police officers linked to violence at protests last week in Jordan are under arrest in Amman today, where demonstrations are intensifying as Jordanians seek swift political reform. Osman Namadi reports.
Four Jordanian policemen suspected of beating up both protesters and journalists were arrested today in Amman. The incident occurred last week during pro-democracy protests in the heart of the Jordanian capital after Friday prayers at the famous Husseini Mosque. Several members of the media, including a New York Times journalist and an AFP reporter, were among those attacked. Officials claim that officers were trying to prevent opposing groups from clashing, but demonstrators say police were trying to stop them from setting up a protest camp. Reporters say security forces tried to prevent them from covering the events. Protests in Jordan have continued since the beginning of the Arab Spring and are mainly aimed at corruption, lack of economic and political reforms, and King Abdullah's total grip on power. Protests outside of Amman have been few, but have spread to Jordan's main cities. Asma Namadi, FSRN, Amman, Jordan.
According to reports emerging from Syria, hundreds of people were detained over the weekend. Unconfirmed videos reveal massive funeral marches for dozens killed in Damascus on Friday during the biggest protest since the onset of the uprising. Some 30 people were killed in Homs in fighting between Christians, Sunni Muslims, and pro-government Alawites after the disfigured bodies of three regime supporters were returned to family. And according to protest organizers, government forces cut power and communication services in the town of Zabadani before about 2,000 troops moved into the city on the outskirts of Damascus. International media remain barred from the country. And in Japan, TEPCO crews are building a temporary roof over the damaged Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant as Typhoon Ma'an approaches. TEPCO has also stopped pumping radioactive water from the reactors. And Japanese authorities are expected to ban the shipment of local cattle after beef from the region was found to contain abnormal levels of radioactive cesium. The cows were fed straw cut from Fukushima area fields after the March meltdown. Officials deny any threat to public health from eating the meat. For Free Speech Radio News, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Danny Wood in San Francisco. In Afghanistan today, General John Allen assumed command of US and coalition forces from General David Petraeus. Petraeus is leaving to take charge of the CIA. During the handover ceremony in Kabul, General Allen explained his priorities.
My intention to maintain the momentum of this campaign, this great campaign on which we have embarked. I will continue to support in every way possible the recruiting, the training, the preparation and equipping and the fielding and the employment of the Afghan National Security Forces.
Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the war with the Taliban was having success.
They've been pushed out of sanctuary. They've been denied influence over local populations. They've been hounded and they've been hunted. Their leaders killed or captured by the score.
NATO also began handing over security control to local Afghan police in Bamiyan province today, but many areas remain volatile. Today, four NATO troops were killed in two separate attacks in the east of the country. And on Saturday night, one of President Hamid Karzai's closest allies, a former governor of southern Uruzgan, was murdered in a raid on his home. Last Tuesday, Karzai's younger brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai, a powerful political figure in southern Afghanistan, was also killed in a raid allegedly by the Taliban. Civilians also continue to die in large numbers. According to new figures from the United Nations, more than 1,400 civilians were killed in the first 6 months of this year, an increase of 15%. About 80% were attributed to anti-government elements. The UN says landmine-style explosives devices are responsible for the increase in civilian casualties. While the US military continues its campaign in Afghanistan, in neighbouring Pakistan, there's continuing opposition to the CIA's drone strikes. Activists, lawyers, and two Pakistani citizens will begin the process of seeking an arrest warrant for former CIA official John Rizzo, who they accuse of overseeing some of the deadly drone strikes. According to The Guardian, the lawyers say the US is violating the laws of war, and they want Rizzo and possibly others involved in the drone strikes charged with murder. For more on this and the implications of the visit this weekend of Pakistan's spy chief to Washington, we go to Raza Rumi in Lahore. He's editor of the PAK Tea House website. Welcome to Free Speech Radio News.
Many thanks for having me.
How would you describe the public debate about drone attacks in Pakistan?
You have to realize that Pakistan's public opinion is controlled by a few powerful actors within the Urdu media. Particularly the print and electronic mediums, and there are certain sections of the state which want to whip up anti-Americanism in the public domain as a sort of a lever against Pakistan's engagement with the U.S. So by citing that, oh, the public is so much against the U.S. and there are limits to our cooperation, because there is, as you know, divergence between the strategic objectives of both the U.S. and Pakistan in Afghanistan, and also about the areas where these drones are being struck.
So what do you see as the divergences in the strategic objectives that you describe?
Yes, I think Pakistan's primary concern is to ensure that the Indian influence in Afghanistan is kept to a minimum, and any post-US withdrawal scenario should ensure that Pakistan is not encircled on the east and the west by the Indian influence. I think that's number one. And number two is the fact that there are sections of the Taliban which Pakistan wants to or has been unwittingly or unwittingly protecting, so that they become sort of bargaining tools in the Afghanistan endgame. So I think that is where this debate is also emanating from. So in the areas where the drone strikes actually take place, there are very mixed views about drone strikes. There are some people who actually welcome these strikes. There are many who say no, innocent civilians are being killed. But outside those areas, in the main big urban centers, politicians use the anti-Americanism to whip up public emotion and to increase their leverage, with the West and the global community. So I think that's where this debate is located, in the larger conflicts and nuances of the war on terror.
Among those who are against the drone strikes, is there a growing sentiment that these strikes are illegal and that U.S. officials should be charged?
Well, I think there is there are definitely a very strong public view that who has authorized these drone strikes. Now, we know through WikiLeaks that both Pakistan's politicians as well as the military leaders have actually asked the U.S. to go ahead with the drone strikes. But in public, they are very shy and reticent to accept that they have actually given the go-ahead. And there is apparently a secret deal between Pakistan's former President Musharraf and the U.S. administration. But the Pakistani public has been kept in dark. So, I mean, you know, this is how the military machine and the spy agencies work. And in particular in Pakistan, there's little state accountability and transparency. So I think it would serve Pakistan's interests better if the public is taken into confidence that, look, for reasons X, Y, and Z, we did allow drone strikes, but now we can sort of renegotiate with the Americans. But that is not happening because the public posturing, both in the U.S. and Pakistan, particularly after the demise of Osama bin Laden on May the 2nd, has escalated and intensified to a new degree.
One of the commentators on your PAC Tea House blog raises questions about what the alternative would be to US drone strikes, including whether ground troops would be used or whether the civilian death toll from suicide bombings would be even higher. Are his views similar to the Pakistani leadership, do you think?
I think there are many arguments for drones and against drones, but I think that the biggest issue is, what is their legal status? Are they violative of Pakistan's sovereignty and international law? I think these are the tricky questions which are resonating in the public mind. To some degree, drone strikes have actually made the militants run away from the federally administered tribal areas of Pakistan's border with Afghanistan. But the downside is that the terrorists and the Al-Qaeda network has actually now moved down country into the mainstream, mainland big cities of Pakistan. So for Pakistan, it has been really, really disastrous. Because now, instead of them being concentrated in a border area, they are now spread all over the country, and which also incidentally makes the task of the US more difficult in tracking down where Al-Qaeda leadership is located. So I think it is a policy that definitely needs a revision. And in particular, these recent attempts to book the CIA top officials in the murder of innocent civilians is instructive, because, yes, there have been civilian casualties.
Reza Rumi in Lahore, editor of the PAC Tea House website, thanks very much for your time.
You're most welcome, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Today, President Obama announced the nomination of former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray to head the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. While some progressives who pushed for an Elizabeth Warren appointment are disappointed, others cite Cordray's previous work as evidence of his commitment to consumers. Michael Lawson has more.
As Attorney General, Richard Cordray gained notoriety for going after major banks' fraudulent practices in the wake of the foreclosure crisis. Cordray appeared on Bloomberg News to discuss allegations that Wells Fargo committed fraud.
It is a business model based on fraud that was designed to cut corners in the foreclosure process, because these firms continue to think they play by a different set of rules than every other party in every other court case in this country, and they don't, and they're going to find that out.
The former Jeopardy champion served one term as a Democrat in the House of Representatives in the early 90s and went on to become Ohio's first solicitor. Before being elected Attorney General in 2008, Cordray served as Franklin County Treasurer and then State Treasurer. During his short tenure as Attorney General, Cordray brought suit against Bank of America on behalf of Ohio's largest public employee pension plan. He also reached a $9 million settlement with AIG in 2010 over antitrust practices. Cordray was tapped by Consumer Financial Protection Bureau architect Elizabeth Warren last year to head the enforcement arm of the new bureau. As President Obama praised Cordray, he acknowledged the Bureau's under attack by lobbyists and affirmed his commitment to its success.
That's why reform matters. That's why this Bureau matters. I will fight any efforts to repeal or undermine the important changes that we passed. And we are going to stand up this Bureau and make sure it is doing the right thing for middle-class families all across the country.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was created in last year's Dodd-Frank financial reform bill, and modeled on a 2007 article by Harvard professor Elizabeth Warren. Warren's plain talk about protecting consumers and criticisms of the banking industry made her the darling of progressives and a lightning rod in the banking sector and among Republicans. Consumer advocacy group Public Citizen released a statement blaming Wall Street for Warren not being nominated. Executive Director Robert Wiseman says Cordray will be a strong head for the Bureau, but says Elizabeth Warren is in a class all her own.
There would have been no better fight than nominating Elizabeth Warren to run the Consumer Financial Agency and letting the Republicans stand up on behalf of Wall Street and the big banks and take on the most effective communicator there is about how to make an economy work for regular people. The president chose not to do that.
We're going to get right back to FSRN in just a moment, but first, we have a story that we just had to bring you. Last week, I reported on a story about 24-year-old Kai Nagata, who was the Quebec Bureau Chief for CTV News, and he quit his post two Thursdays ago after just 1 year. Now, he posted an article outlining his reasons for leaving, but he didn't have a falling out with colleagues, or he didn't have a problem with high demands or pressure of the job. His post was titled Why I Quit My Job, and Kai described how he became disillusioned with television news and a growing tension between what people want to see and what a responsible newsman ought to be reporting, and a world where profits trump important news. Now, where journalists are forced to give up their opinions, beliefs, and even their intellectual property. And I have with me Jesse Storm. Jesse, are you with me?
I am, Martin.
Beautiful. And you are actually a broadcasting student who's had a chance to read this, right?
I am, that's correct.
Get Nina in on this, too, because Nina, this is your first newscast at CITR, right into the mic there.
Hello.
So, what is this, does this see any bearing to you, Jesse? You know, you're getting into the big wide world of broadcasting. Does it seem real to you? Like, do you think there's a lack of response
with his thoughts and the process in which he says that the broadcasting systems work and operate? Yes, I do. I completely do. It's to my understanding as well. Often it is taken for granted that a lot of things that are put out there are censored to a point that it's going to allow them to benefit off of it, the stations, that is, as opposed to benefiting the viewers or the listeners.
Do you think there's anything wrong with that?
To a degree, yes. To a degree, no. It takes any kind of, just like the government, with their taxes or whatever, it takes a certain amount of selling yourself to operate a successful business, and that's just what the industry is. The news industry or broadcasting industry is a business. But at the same point, I don't agree with falsifying things for the viewers or the listeners. I mean, it's their right, and it's really for them that we do it in the first place. So it's got to be beneficial to them, and in the long run, it's going to end up being non-beneficial to them. They're just going to go somewhere else for their news rather than, coming to the big guys, because they don't feel that they can trust them anymore. And that's something that you definitely have to keep as a broadcaster, is the trust of your listeners and your viewers.
Definitely brings up that question. Who are the executives to say what the viewers ought to be listening to as well? Someone tunes in to CBC or CITR or whatever it is, and they expect a certain quality, and that's our responsibility to give it to them, not necessarily just to expect, they want this, let's give them more Princess What's-Her-Name and whatever.
Well, I don't think that they necessarily tell them what they need to believe. I think that they take a lot of time. In fact, I know that certain broadcasting companies take the time to do the research and ask the public what they want from them, what kind of resources or information they want from them. So they just go off that basis. I mean, they don't ask them every time, so maybe that's where it's coming from, that they assume, and maybe they shouldn't. But, they do make an effort to make sure that they're reporting what the viewers and listeners are looking for.
Yeah, your first time on air here. What are you expecting? And does this speak anything to you?
Well, yeah, it does, because I think that if you're looking for entertainment news or news to make yourself feel good, you know where to look. You can get a magazine anywhere and read about that. But when it comes to news stations, I'd want to hear truthfulness, and I think that's what every viewer wants to hear. That's what the news is for. It's to inform you and not to make you feel good.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, she's completely right in what she's saying, but at the same time, like you said, you can get give you goosebumps news in any kind of fluff magazine or newspaper. But if you really wanted to hear what's actually going on in the world, you have to listen to the news. You have to be ready to hear what they have to say. You know, people want the information, but then when it's too harsh, they don't want to know. And that's unfortunately a double-sided sword for them.
So they want to eat their cake and have it too.
Exactly. They want to think that the world is all peace, love, and whatever, but unfortunately it's not that way unless we're going to make it that way. And unless you're actually going to listen up to what's going on, it's going to go unnoticed, and then it's going to repeat itself over and over again. If you actually listen to it and do something about it and understand that maybe one person could make a difference or whatever, you know, just by actually being aware instead of ignorant to everything that's going on around them, then, you know, we would have the difference. But until then, they're going to have to deal with the fact that the world is not a pretty place, and you know, we're just giving you the facts of what's going on.
A fault of the human condition, says Jesse Storm. Well, you're taking a break from work. We'll let you go.
All right.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Jesse.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Hi, yeah. Nina.
Hi. You got any more thoughts to shed shed light on this subject, Nina?
Well, I just... Basically, Jesse was completely, everything that she said, I completely agreed with. It's sad because I know that there's a lot of people who like watching the news when it is feel good, but nothing's ever going to change unless people are hearing the bad stuff, and unless there's those token people that hear it and try and make a difference from it. So,
I think the real unfortunate thing is that, like Kai explains, that it's actually infecting our national broadcaster. You'd figure that CBC would be more or less put on a pedestal, and, would treat things fairly. But he does have a point, I guess, when real news was breaking.
Yes.
People were focusing on Prince William and his new wife, Kate.
It's ridiculous. And CBC is supposed to be our news, not our entertainment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. They certainly don't do a very good job of entertaining us. The television shows are not the highest quality. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to CITR News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Martin Lemelin.
I'm Nina Kurgia.
We'll be back in a minute.
Become a friend of CITR and receive great discounts at businesses around Vancouver.
Your Friends of CITR card will net you discounts downtown at 212 Productions, Beat Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, Heart and Soul Clothing Incorporated, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinema Tech, Scratch Records, True Value Vintage, Vinyl Records, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus, or visit us online at citr.ca.
For 7 days in July, Vancouver will play host to another international gathering of sports enthusiasts as we host the North American Out Games. The Out Games will feature 18 different sports, from badminton to poker to hockey. The games will also include the Human Rights Conference, with workshops on diversity and an awards ceremony recognizing individuals and corporations that have influenced LGBTQ rights. Scheduled events during week-long games include a job fair, the Miss Gay and Lesbian Sports Association pageant, cultural activities, and the most amazing closing ceremonies you've ever laid witness to. The event will come to a close with a march of athletes in the world-famous 2011 Vancouver Pride Parade. Catch all the festivities, events, and parties at www.vancouver2011outgames.com. Listen to our live broadcast on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, or check out our live stream at www.citr.ca and www.queerfmvancouver.com.
And welcome back to CITR News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building here at UBC campus. Good Lord. I'm now joined by Scott Douglas, who is going to perform for us the weather. He's going to inform us about the weather. And tell us, Scott, I hear you've got you got into the psychic to figure out what to eat? Is this better, Scott?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yes, that's better.
I went and I checked, so I'm an amateur meteorologist with good sources.
Oh, that's better than what I've got, at least.
I know. I'm sure of that. And so what I've done is I've gone to my buddy, who's he's a bit of a reader, bit of a telepath, he dabbles, and I've gotten a meal that he thinks should line up well with whatever kind of day we have coming.
Ooh, this sounds...
So I'm gonna just dive into this.
May as well.
Cool. All right, so we'll start with today. I know a lot of you probably don't have time to change what meal you have planned for tonight, but start with the weather. Today, saw a bleak morning turn into actually a fairly standard mid-July day. A high of 22 degrees centigrade and some partially clouded sunshine will give way soon to overcast skies and an overnight temperature of 14 degrees. Now, tonight's psychically recommended meal is a stir-fry. Pay attention now. A stir-fry with no less than 3, but no more than 2 bell peppers.
All right.
So you're going to stick in the 2.5 to 3 range there.
Where are you getting your sources from?
That's my buddy Steve. I shouldn't have said that. I won't say his last name because he doesn't like people coming to his house.
And, you know, privacy rights and things like that. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, sure. Tomorrow's weather promises much of the same. Partly cloudy, daytime high of 20 degrees, which, for those of you interested, is precisely room temperature.
Ooh. No, yeah. Scott, you don't expect us to eat stir-fry twice in a row, do you?
Sir, I do not. A little wind expected tomorrow, so I just want to throw in here, you should probably not wear a jacket because it's going to be room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 14 degrees tomorrow night. Now, it would be dangerous tomorrow, my psychic friend tells me, not to have a BLT.
Not? All right.
So if you're putting your life at risk if you don't have a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, he took some other things into account here. I want to point out, if you are kosher, mm-hmm. do not eat a BLT. You'll be further imperiling yourself. Try a turkey BLT.
Oh, yes. Steve sounds like a very, very knowledgeable man.
He thinks ahead.
Mm.
Yeah. Wednesday, hump day, brings moisture, not from the ground, from the sky. It's going to be sunny and about 17 degrees. And then watch as everyone but you remembers their umbrellas for the walk home. Now, interestingly enough, the psychic didn't have anything to say about this. You will forget your umbrella on Wednesday.
There's nothing I can do about it.
No. But for dinner, you should have a good stiff penne. Don't overcook it. Al dente. Avec bolognese and a garlic toast with no Parmesan cheese at all.
No Parmesan, you say?
None. Which I thought was odd. Steve recommends Romano.
Oh, all right.
I know.
Steve's wisdom is sometimes unfathomably admirable.
I was floored when he told me that. I had to sit down.
Yeah. Lucky I am now.
I should have said. Thursday, it is going to rain. There's no way around it. You can whine about it all you want. Who cares? It's going to rain. It's going to be 17 degrees. This weather will prepare you for Friday, a day that it's also going to rain and be 17 degrees. Now, this is going to be, actually, the weekend should be beautiful. We're looking at 20 degrees Saturday with anywhere between 6 and 15 clouds in the sky.
And
just a note on food here for the end of the week. Thursday is taco night. Hard or soft shelled, it does not matter. It all ends up the same. And also save the leftovers because, that's right, Friday is fajita night.
Ooh, that's a lining into a Mexican weekend, aren't we, Scott?
It's going to be a little Baja. Mm. We'll feel a little nice weekend. So go easy on the sour cream, though. That is the wide, wild week of weather. Brought to you today by Tiddlywinks. Tiddlywinks, the official silly little game of Cambridge University since 1955.
Fine games they come up with, too. Thank you very much, Scott Douglas.
You're welcome. Have yourself a good one.
Bye-bye. So just to recap that, we're going to have a little bit of rain, but meals, according to Psychic Steve, are stir-fry BLT, penne on Wednesdays, taco and fajita Thursday, Friday. That was a weather report like I had not seen before. What do you think about that, Nina?
I don't really know what to think because I'm not sure I'm really into the whole psychic thing, but I'm gonna...
Those were solid meal suggestions.
But you know what? I'm scared not to eat them now.
Mm-hmm. Especially the BLT. Steve said it would be dangerous not to.
Yeah, dangerous.
Well, we're gonna have your inaugural segment right after this break. What are we gonna call it?
We're gonna call it Vancouver Get Out and Go.
In 1 minute. On News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You know, Joe, you start with these riffs in your head.
We're good.
And something you want to say, and You want us being gold, but the thing is, people don't want your sounds. They only want...
You people, you're the fucking coolest!
Just fucking use you. You know what I'm saying, Joe?
What is that? What is it? One more shot? A salute?
Tune in to Sore Throats and Clapping Hands, hosted by Robert Privet, Monday evenings at 6:30 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And in the end, it's love. And in the end, it's love. And in the end, it's love.
Spare time? Would you listen to this? How about this one? If you like what you hear, then check out The Rib with your host, Robin Jacob, Mondays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
And welcome back to CITR News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building here at UBC. Joined by, I'm Martin.
I'm Nina.
And Nina's got a very special segment she's going to lay on us here. What are you going to tell us here, Nina?
Well, Martin, I'm going to call this Vancouver Get Up and Go. Mm-hmm. Because, frankly, it's summer, and we all need to get up and go.
Enjoy the summer, yeah, sure.
Enjoy, fully enjoy. So I have some different cultural activities that one can attend, and most of them are free. Bonus.
Yeah, that's a massive bonus, because I probably would not be partaking otherwise.
That's what I was thinking. So, one of the things I have heard about is Fresh Air Cinema. Now, as you can see, Fresh Air, so cinema outside, those are movies playing all of July and August at various venues across the Lower Mainland, such as Stanley Park and Robson Square, and those will be playing, I'm not sure how many times a week, but fairly often.
Are those the big inflatable screens I've seen set up in Stanley Park?
Yes, you are correct.
I see. Have you been to one of those yet?
No, I haven't. I've been waiting for them, but because of this weather, a couple of them have been canceled. So I'm just waiting. I'm excited for
what
the
kind
next
of movies
movie.
Do they play?
Just every type of movie. At different venues, there's different movies. So you can check online on their website. I'm not really sure what's playing these days, but I'm sure they're great.
Do they have classic nights and like that?
They have classic nights, and I think they also have, like, even new release movies and newer movies that just came out, which is
even
bonus.
Better, yeah, yeah.
So,
that's number one on...
That is definitely number one. Number two would be Theater Under the Stars.
Oh, yes. Yes, Theater I've Under heard the about this, too.
Yep, and... Theater Under the Stars isn't just weather dependent. It is rain or shine. They will give you ponchos.
This is the Malkin Bowl, right?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been to the Malkin Bowl?
Yes.
I've never been there. I'm told this is one of, like, the most fantastic venues in the city.
Oh, yes.
Yes?
Very fantastic. But Theater Under the Stars is going to be playing Bye Bye Birdie.
A classic.
Classic.
My high school used to do Bye Bye Birdie back in the day.
Yeah.
I didn't take part, but sure.
Oh, Martin. Okay, well, it's a rom-com / love triangle comedy, so I'm sure it'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
They're also playing Anything Goes, also a rom-com. Theater Under the Stars into rom-coms this season.
I guess so.
So those will both be playing July through to August.
Every night?
Not every night.
Sure?
They vary night to night.
They vary night. I think they flip-flop.
Yeah.
One night they do Bye Bye Birdie, the next night they do Anything Goes.
Yeah, and it's literally like, if it's raining, it's fine. They're still going to be there. So don't you worry.
And they serve beer and snacks at the Malkin Bowl as well, so it is pretty much the ideal summer
pretty
event.
Much.
You're going to have to work pretty hard to top that one on your number three.
Oh, gosh. I'm nervous now. Okay, but you know what? Number three, Pacific Cinematheque. This is why they're awesome. They play old movies that have been restored. Example, tonight I'm going to see La Dolce Vita. Last show is actually tonight. If you want to go, I'll probably be there. We can chat.
Or sneak in, yeah.
Or...
What does that mean in Italian? La Dolce Vita?
I'm going to say I don't know, but I've heard awesome reviews. There's other shows starting, The Green Ray and The Soft Skin examples. So they're all older movies, and I have heard from various sources that they are awesome, and it doesn't even seem like they're old.
Mm-hmm. It has to be good, because I just looked at it, La Dolce Vita, The Sweet Life.
Sweet Life. Yes. So who doesn't want a little bit of Sweet Life?
Yeah, that's you could be living the Sweet Life.
If only you went to the Pacific Cinematheque tonight and saw it at 7 o'clock.
And we've got one more on
this. We've got one more, actually. Number four, which is this... Oh, this is a big one. This might just top off Tuts, Theater Under the Stars.
You have saved the best for last year?
I have. This is called Summer Live in Stanley Park. And this is not a one-day affair. This is July 8th, 9th, and 10th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it is just a huge festival of awesomeness.
July 8th, 9th, and 10th, eh?
Yeah. And that...
The 2 weekends ago?
Yeah, that was a teaser, though, because it's still awesome.
Yes, that's true.
And it was great.
If you were at the Summer Live, you can give us a call here at 822-CITR. We would love to hear what it was really like. That's all right, Nina.
Yeah.
Fib number one, get it out of the way, out of the system.
It's fine. Woo!
Anyways, you're listening to CITR News 101. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a minute.
Are you interested in radio, but not quite sure how to get involved? CITR is the place for you. We are a volunteer-driven campus and community radio station with a variety of volunteer opportunities. Want to become an on-air programmer? Learn about promotions? Maybe become a news or arts reporter? Come learn about all the ways you can become involved at CITR. Volunteer orientations are held on the first Monday of every month at 6:30 p.m. If the first Monday falls on a statutory holiday, the orientation moves to the second Monday. Visit CITR.ca for more information. Become a friend of CITR and receive great discounts at businesses around Vancouver. Your friends of CITR card will net you discounts on Commercial Drive at Audio Pile, Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, and the People's Co-op Bookstore. You'll also save online at Band March Canada and Big Mama. It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or visit us online at CITR.ca.
It's new. It's exciting. It's the sounds of Africa. For the sounds of African music, join me, Sheila Sam, every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9:30, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. From soukous to reggae, some juju, some jazz. From North Africa to South Africa and the African diaspora, I got you covered. Enrich your musical knowledge and taste as you savor the sounds coming from the Sahara right across to the Kalahari, right here on CITR 101.9 Vancouver. Tune in for the unique sounds of Africa. Start your day right with the beat and the rhythm of Africa.
Welcome back to CITR News 101. I'm Martin Lemlin, joined now by Corey, who has something that he wants to get off his mind. Isn't that right, Corey?
That's right, Martin. It's a pleasure to be on your show. How are you doing?
I'm excellent.
Excellent. Good. I've got a little something I want to say just about the place that we live in, the place that I call home.
I'm always interested to hear some insight.
All right. Now, it can be argued that no place on Earth has the bounty of resources afforded to it as British Columbia. When the world grows thirsty, we will be quenched. When nations starve, we will be fed. When coal and oil cease to be, we will have the wind and water harnessed and yoked. In short, we can survive. But why settle for survival when the opportunity to thrive presents itself? But how hard it is to thrive in a world that contracts the dreams of youth into the service of greed, money-grubbing overlords keen to turn your 8-hour daily penance into their personal high score. To thrive, we need to find a way to free the minds enslaved to indulgence and waste. British Columbia needs an intellectual revolution, and it needs it now. Raise the banner of science in this province and watch as great minds the world over clamor to solve our problems. Let them find a better way to grow our crops, a greener way to farm our fish, a safer way to power our homes. Let them have an honest wage doing it, so they need not toil in service to the oil sands or be forced to best advise how to chop down a 1,000-year forest, then design the machine to do it, all in the name of feeding their families. We will never find a perfect way to do things, but with effort and focus by those capable, we can always find a better way. Scientists trained to solve our problems. Give them the resources that they might return the favor tenfold. Now, I do not claim to speak to the technicalities behind such endeavors, merely the endeavors themselves. The idea and hope that if we tried as hard at greatness as we seem to do at mediocrity, we could be living in a province far, far better than the one we live in right now. And that's kind of what I have to say on that. Do you have any questions for me, Martin?
Well, that's pretty idealistic of you, Corey.
I don't think it's idealistic at all. I mean, it's what we were raised to believe in, a better future and a better tomorrow. If that's idealism, then I'm not sure what I was told growing up. I don't think it's greedy or shameful or embarrassing to look for a better tomorrow, to think, what are we doing wrong and how can we do it better?
Do you see this coming?
I mean, I'd like to hope that it's coming, but I fear that the path we're leading down is that of the status quo.
Oh, yes.
It takes an exceptional courage to say, that way is okay, but I think we have a better way. You have to stick your neck out above the clamoring masses, and that leaves it vulnerable. One misstep, one misstroke, and I mean, we can be swarmed by those who want our resources. So it's definitely a very steep cliff, a tenuous route to travel. But it's risk reward. If we take the risk, then we have the opportunity to find a way to hopefully inspire the rest of the world and have them follow our positive footsteps.
Well, until that day, we'll anxiously await.
Well, I mean, you don't have to just anxiously wait. The way, it is a possible future, but only if we all work at it. Write your members of parliament. Write anyone who has any influence and say, we want our scientists to be able to focus on pure research. We want them to be able to find a way to make things better instead of giving money to drug companies so they can keep people alive just for profit or, drain the resources of the ocean for some food.
You feel strongly one way or the other about NASA's final shuttle mission here coming to a close?
Yes and no. I feel very sad that that we aren't going to have the presence in space that we did, the iconness of the space program and the shuttle program especially is incredible. But again, that was a technology that we've had for decades. I mean, it's sad that the shuttle program is closing. But it wouldn't be sad if we had a newer, better program taking its place. I think there is a time to lay down some technology, and this might be the time for NASA, or that might be the time for NASA and their shuttle program, where their airing is not pushing the advent of future and better technologies aggressively, I feel.
All right, well, thanks a lot for calling in, Corey.
It was always a pleasure, Martin.
That was awesome.
All right, you have yourself a good day.
You too.
Bye.
All right, well, now we're going to kick things back over to FSRN about a struggle for California grocery store clerks and their fight for rights.
In Southern California, labor negotiations remain at a standstill since grocery companies and representatives for 62,000 workers began talks a few months ago. The workers have held rallies in Arcadia, Compton, and other California locations to call attention to the stalled talks. FSRN's Leilani Albano has the story.
Bonds, Albertsons, and Ralph's employees have so far rejected a new contract deal that requires them to pay more into their health care system. They're also facing cuts in pay and benefits. All this is edging workers closer to a strike.
It's something that I think that we should do if we don't get what we want.
That was Chris Schultz, a Ralph sales manager in Studio City. Southern California workers have been working without a contract since their last one expired in March. Frustrations over the recent labor talks prompted members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, representing the workers, to vote in April in favor of a strike authorization. The vote does not mean that there will be a strike, but it gives workers a stronger negotiating position. Muffy Sunday, organizer with the Freedom Socialist Party, says that the workers don't agree with the direction of the current talks.
I've heard it described as concession after concession after concession.
The rising tensions are reminiscent of the 2003 grocery strikes. Then, many Southern California customers sided with workers and stopped shopping at the three grocery stores as Vons workers went on a prolonged strike. At the same time, Ralph's and Albertson's employees got locked out of their jobs. Workers' advocates think they'd once again garner sympathy from the public.
They have a huge amount of residual sympathy and support from that 2003-2004 strike.
A strike was averted in 2007 after the grocery companies granted workers modest increases in pay and benefits. Today's contract talks have been a mixed bag. On the upside, Ralph's spokesperson, Kendra Doyle, says the companies agreed to pay 100% of the workers' pensions. On the downside, they remain deadlocked on employee contributions to health care.
The area that we're working on right now and seem to be the most contentious is the health care portion of the contract.
The grocery company's health care proposal calls for employee contributions of $9 a week for single coverage and $23 a week for family coverage. She says that is way below the national average of $76 a month for health care.
Her employees are among the best compensated grocery workers in the country.
But union officials say the companies aren't factoring in other health care costs, such as premiums, deductibles, and copay. The UFCW website says the total amount is around $11,000 a year. Ralph's sales manager, Chris Schultz, says that amount puts health care out of reach for many employees.
Some of the people in there really make like, you know, $8 an hour, and that's what they support their family on. So for them to pay extra on health care is just outrageous.
Other reductions are also being discussed. Schultz thinks the workers should strike if the grocery companies don't come up with an acceptable solution.
I think it's important that we exercise the right to speak up for our opinions and have a say because the corporations are just too big.
But not everyone wants to strike. Jesus Ambartsimian, a Ralph's courtesy clerk in Studio City, says he has no intention in joining a work stoppage.
Is that something that you want to do?
No, not really. It just does not affect me in any other way.
During the negotiations, UFCW President Rick Icaza expressed hesitance over striking. But Sunday says the union must strongly back the workers if they choose to walk out of their jobs.
The union is going to have to choose to strike when anything for their members and to not have to give away what their members can't afford.
The LA County Federation of Labor has pledged $100,000 in strike funds. Critics say that is only a fraction of what may be needed. But federal spokeswoman Carolyn O'Connor says grocery workers will be getting lots of support.
Enough is enough. We can't allow these types of attacks.
O'Connor says that unions with the county fed have also implemented adopt-a-store programs. Participants, including the Longshoremen and the Inland Boatmen's Union, say they will support grocery employees in the event of a strike. She adds that unions, including the Teamsters, say they will not cross the picket line at striking stores. Leilani Albano, FSRN, Los Angeles.
Thanks to FSRN for that. Once again, if you want to get more of their stuff, you can find it at FSRN.org. I'm Martin Lumlin.
I'm Nina Kurgia.
And you're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Nina's got the latest on the Romano Manzoor story.
Yes, so. I do. After undergoing 4 surgeries in an effort to restore her eyesight, it was announced today that the severity of the injuries to Ramona Monzer's eyes are beyond repair. Monzer is now recuperating from the surgeries and looking forward to seeing her mother and daughter, who have been granted temporary permits and are due to arrive in Vancouver shortly. Meanwhile, UBC continues on towards a set goal to raise $70,000 for Ramona to help cover medical and living expenses while she's here. With a summer schedule full of fundraising events, it seems unlikely that the goal won't be reached. The school's already riled up $61,000, and you can donate at any of the Toonies for Ramona glass jars that are spread around campus.
It seems as though China is single-handedly keeping BC's lumber industry in work. From January until May, BC shipped over 2.5 million cubic meters of softwood to China, which doubles the same period last year in both volume and value. Now, this year's recent figure also launches BC's softwood ahead of the U.S. in value for the first time ever, which is shedding a bit of light on the importance of the BC lumber trading with China. The largest growing economy in the world is keeping our fledgling lumber industry afloat, keeping roughly about 10,000 jobs that probably wouldn't be there if not for China's trade. And in other provincial news, a Chilean Navy vessel with a dark past is bound for BC's docks. The Esmeralda is one of the largest sailing ships in the world, and nowadays they use it to train Chilean Navy cadets. But word has it that the ship was used for a kind of floating jail and torture chamber back in the day. Under Chile's Augusto Pinochet regime from 1973 to 1990, it's believed that the Esmeralda kept over 100 people at a time and subjected them to brutally hideous treatment. One of the prisoners was a British priest named Michael Woodward, who later died as a result of his Esmeralda tortures. Now, because of its gruesome history, the Esmeralda is often met by protesters on his international voyages. It's already happened in Dartmouth, in Quebec, even in Santiago, Chile, the ship's home port. Keeping in line with history, Victoria City Council passed a motion in June urging the provincial and federal governments to deny Esmeralda access to the city's harbor. But Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pash stresses that the ship's visit is indeed routine. The ship runs about 113 meters in length and is capable of sailing 20 knots, or about 35 kilometers an hour. And she's used as a roving embassy for Chile. She's going to be docking in Victoria on August 1st, then sailing north to Vancouver on August 6th. And that's going to do it for this edition of News 101. Thanks a lot for listening to us. I'm Martin Lemelin.
I'm Nina Kurgia.
Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments with the show, get involved, or give us a hot news tip, please don't hesitate to contact us.